758 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights, and, well, nobody ever said all Christmas specials had to be wholesome and uplifting.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm hoping to discover some more news this time around.
And if something is called The Last of Us 2... Is that kind of like Final Fantasy 15?
It just begs the question, will it be then The Last of Me for the third installment?
That's right. So, yes, we have quite a lot of interesting and a huge variety of news this week as we go into what is actually a relatively sparse week when it comes to episodic discussion. The holiday weekend had a lot to do with that. But, we actually have some movie discussion for later, perhaps, and who knows what else we can get into. But before we do any of that... Edmund, if you could please.
Yes, as ever, we will tell you all the things we know. So if it's the news, we hope you like that. If it's episode discussion, you will be spoiled if you haven't seen them.
That's right. And we're going to begin with an interesting little nugget here coming out of CBS. And Gary, why don't you take this one away?
There's not only is the main part of the news fun, but some of the little bits fill in some of the cracks that we haven't heard about to date. What we're talking about is Star Trek Discovery. They've finally announced that they will be beginning filming early next year in 2017. They've also announced two other roles have been filled. Actor Doug Jones is joining the cast as Lieutenant Saru, an alien from a previously unseen species in the Star Trek universe, and Anthony Rapp as Discovery Science Officer. The little tidbit of information that's squeezed in this story mentions that no other casting has been announced, including the lead character who will be referred to as Number One. So that, I'm assuming, means they've also confirmed that Michelle Yeoh will actually be the captain for certain. So we've fleshed out a few more people and still don't know who the main actor is, and they haven't been cast yet. I feel so much more secure in the show. Anyway, story also goes to, it will be filmed out of the Pinewood Studios in Toronto. It does confirm that Brian Fuller will be having no real input or production with the show going forward. I believe they still will be retaining his first two episodes and his season one outline. But as far as any other inputs, he will not be there at all. Akiva Goldsman is going to be moving into the top creative role of the series. And... we'll have to wait and see. That we've also gotten just a hint more as to what CBS's streaming service will be. There will be a $5.99 per month service with commercial ads and a $10 per month service that's supposedly commercial free.
Okay.
So roughly in line with what kind of nonsense Hulu is doing these days.
Yeah, and I have also noticed a couple of ads that have popped up on my browsers occasionally, making their way past Adblock somehow. But one thing I noticed was CBS touting All Access, but mentioning that they will give you a 1 week free trial. So there they seem to be breaking with the usual, yes, give people a month for free and let them and before they decide on if they want to continue as with the paid service. So seems to me to be CBS. Yes, yeah, not quite getting the right end of the stick again.
Also, I have noticed in some of the promo pieces for this service that it isn't just current shows, but they're opening up an extensive back catalog, going back in some cases 10 to 20 years, if not further, with old CBS shows. So if there's a hankering for a particular CBS show from the past that you enjoyed, you're going to have access to multiple seasons of them. So I'll skip my criticism, but as far as that goes, that might be nice for some people and make it more attractive.
Okay.
Well, all I can say is that if they're going to be filming in early 2017, they better get started with casting that main role already.
Yeah, especially, they're saying spring.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
My definition of spring would be April, say, and they're going into the new year without a main character.
They need to start shooting before that if they are still going to hit that May date.
Well, I'll try and be a little bit on the positive side and say that Voyager as well had to can the first two episodes when they changed main characters and brought Kate Mulgrew in very late in the game as well. So it's not without precedent, but in some senses, this Star Trek production is brand new, where you could say Voyager was a continuation of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and that it shared and borrowed much of the staff and creative talent. Discovery is starting pretty much with a blank slate, so they got to come up with everything from scratch. So maybe, where Voyager might have been able to pull it off, Discovery could have a much harder time.
It's quite possible that could be a factor. I won't lie. It's quite possible. All right. Any other thoughts here on Discovery? Other than it's becoming... this could be a very interesting production. Let's put it that way. I mean, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of Star Trek fans that are going to tune in. But not necessarily because they think it's going to be the greatest thing ever. I think it's going to be more along the lines of, let's see what this is going to turn into. I have this, just that the sentiment is not particularly positive right now. I'm kind of concerned, but trying to keep a positive outlook.
Although I do have to say, I don't see the hatred that Next Generation engendered when it was first being announced.
True, true.
So
it has been a while. I don't know. We'll see. All right, moving over to Fox, speaking of things that may not be going as planned. Well, it turns out that, that X-Files season 11 that was supposed to be roughly twice as long as season 10 was? You know, the revival was a relative hit for Fox, and so they wanted to capitalize on it, and everybody was really rallying behind that idea. Maybe not so much. Turns out that Gillian Anderson told Reuters that she thinks that another season may not happen at all, thinking that X-Files at this point is in fact potentially finished. She just finished shooting two films herself and has a regular role in American Gods coming up on Starz soon. More evidence of a rocky negotiation comes from Ann Simon, who is fairly close to Chris Carter and a science advisor for the series and has a lot to do, or shall we say, a lot of blame to take for some of the mythology episodes in season 10. But she has been keeping fans in the loop on her Twitter. And, well, just a little while ago, she said, what I know about X-Files 11, glitch caused negotiations to stop. Last heard, it was a definite maybe, been trying to learn more, worried too, looked very positive for a long time, then day after the election, heard about problems, didn't want everyone to be as anxious as me. That's a little honest.
Yeah.
To say the least, and that usually, when you're that honest, that says things are definitely hitting a snag. So, yeah, I don't know if this is a pushback on Anderson's part or anyone's part regarding the fact that Fox was pushing for more episodes, but it definitely seems like maybe all those people that were saying, Chris Carter, what were you thinking, leaving it on a cliffhanger? Yeah, this is why. This is why we said that. Just saying. Not a good idea to do that. Prison Break, take that lesson, please. Come back, have your little, reunion tour, wrap it up, move on.
I thought Flash was just the next season. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, it gets confusing. Why do you say that, Gary?
Because didn't they say, they wanted to break out and become supervillains?
That's right.
Oh. Yes.
All right, moving over to ABC. Edmund.
This is news out of all things, an investors conference for IMAX Entertainment. CEO Greg Foster was quoted as saying that they are renewing their pitch to get more TV deals after ABC has, as we announced previously, is sending their new Marvel live-action series, The Inhumans, into IMAX theaters in early September 2017 for premiere there. IMAX is looking for a second series and says this is at the high high end of the range of what we'll be doing, but we're already looking for a second series. This is a really exciting opportunity that could blossom into more. They had talked about this earlier to try and move beyond their movie distribution niche, and so this was basically reiterating it to the investors, and they feel that diversifying into TV will allow the giant screen exhibitor to hedge against box office volatility and show alternative programming during slower periods like that first half of September, when there are typically not tentpole films after the summer glut. Confirming that it will be the first two episodes of The Inhumans, about 80 minutes worth of content, debuting exclusively in IMAX theaters on or around September 1st, ahead of a two-week theatrical run before the first episode drops on ABC on September 26th. And also, just in terms of the scheduling on the network, all eight episodes are expected to run over consecutive Tuesdays, barring unforeseen interruptions. So IMAX angling for even more content, kind of like to hear that the Inhumans will be spooling out. We hope, fingers crossed, without interruptions.
Now, what I find interesting about the whole Inhumans deal is that they're going to put it out on IMAX, which I think is great. That really interests me. Until I hear the fact that when it runs on television, because it's going to be the first two episodes, essentially, there's going to be additional content on the TV airing that wasn't in the IMAX version. Well, as a fan, very busy September, mm-hmm. which one am I going to go for?
Yeah.
The one that is more flexible with DVR and time shifting and everything else, or an IMAX version that's incomplete? I think maybe that was not the best plan. Just saying. What do you think, Gary? Any trepidation there or head scratching, or do you think this is perfectly fine as is?
Well, there's always needs to be some, I guess, plus to have somebody come to a movie theater in some cases instead of just watch it at home. And I would have expected, honestly, some sort of extra content, even if it was along the lines of an after credit scene or something like that, to sort of to thank the audience for spending the extra money to go see it in the theater. So at the reversing of that leaves me scratching my head as well. That doesn't seem to make much sense to me. You would think the extra footage would be in the theaters, even if it wasn't necessarily extremely relevant to the storyline moving forward. At least it would be some sort of either Easter egg or some additional bit of character fleshed out to reward the audience for going to the movies. So I'm stumped too.
Yeah, or even something along the lines of the what they've done with some of the Doctor Who Fathom movie theater showings of some behind the scenes content, or an introduction from the cast or producers or something like that. Again along the lines of thanking the fans and giving them some additional introduction.
Yeah, that's always been something I appreciate about the Doctor Who Fathom events and things like that. Fathom events are actually pretty good for that. They're not sponsoring us, but I might as well go ahead and plug it. There's a lot that they do these days that I would love to have time to go and watch in the theater. I think this week, I'm not going to be able to go and see it, but even as this episode airs, they're putting out Spirited Away back on the movie screens.
Yes, absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's awesome.
It's what, 15th anniversary showing, I believe.
Yeah, and so you've got... something like that, where they're actually adding value. Then you've got the IMAX thing, where you're paying a premium to see what I consider to be an incomplete piece. Now, there are some people that would happily go see even 20 minutes of, say, a Star Wars film in IMAX early. And that's perfectly fine. But I wonder if they're going to be upfront about the fact that this is not the version, the complete version that will be shown on television screens. I mean, they're saying it now, but are they going to say it when people actually are paying attention later? I don't think so. But we shall see. We shall see. And I say that knowing that there's a pretty good possibility I might go and see this anyway. So, what are you going to do? All right. Moving on then to the cable world. Gary?
Oh, yes. We have some news, and I'm not surprised, but never. the less here it is. Sci-Fi has announced that Z Nation has been renewed for its fourth season. The season four of Z Nation will consist of 13 episodes and will air next year in 2017. It's been a good performer for the network, averaging about 1.2 million viewers, and about 500,000 of those are in that sweet 18 to 49 demographic that advertisers love so much. This, of course, continues sci-fi's latest programming choice to include science fiction shows in their lineup. They, of course, are on a run lately with Channel Zero, Dark Matter, The Expanse, Killjoys, The Magicians, Van Helsing, as well as Wynonna Earp. So their season finale for season three will be airing, if not the week you're hearing this, right afterwards on December 16th. And we have this fourth season to look forward to next year. So kudos for those of you who love vampires, but might not be Walking Dead fans. This definitely is a slightly different vein of zombie life, and if you don't like one, you might like the other, or like some of us, you might enjoy both.
Oh, there you go. I actually am surprised that it made it this far, so good for them.
I was a little, you know, when it got the season two renewal, I have to admit I was shocked, but it's pulling the numbers in. That's all, you know, and that's really what counts in basic cable is, you know, are eyes on it, and they are.
Well, there you go. All right, and that brings us to quote-unquote alternative networks.
Yes.
And this time around, it's actually really alternative to the networks in at least one case, but we'll get there soon enough. Edmund, why don't you get us started off here with something that I can't say I was surprised because I heard about it from the creator himself, but...
Yes, well, yeah.
Leaves me scratching my head.
Yes, those of us who follow some of our favorite writers and producers had gotten advance notice that Netflix has finally announced the return of Sense8, and what was a bit of a surprise was the fact that there will in fact be a Sense8 Christmas special dropping on Netflix on December 23rd, and then Season 2, which will be 10 episodes, will then be returning on May 5th of 2017. And as ever with this show, they do like to keep us mostly in the dark, so we do not get spoiled by whatever twists and turns they have in store, but what they do say is the two-hour Christmas special will follow the central characters as they weave in and out of each other's lives, finding deeper connections, learning darker, more desperate secrets about one another, and struggling to identify with more than just oneself. As I said at the top, perhaps a slightly different Christmas special than we've been used to from the likes of Doctor Who, etc. But I'm still, since I very much enjoyed season one, certainly as it got through its initial phases and finally into the meat of the story in the latter part of the season. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where they are going to move on to from there.
It sounds like my existential Christmas.
Yes.
By the Sense8 writers. Okay. Because, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of festive cheer in that description, I'm just saying.
No. Oh, yeah, I mean, and certainly just in general, I mean, given what we saw in season one, it was, this wasn't the sort of show I really thought of as, a traditional Christmas special by any means.
No, not exactly. However, sweet Christmas.
Yes.
Netflix has given us...
A little bit louder, John. Give it a little stronger.
Sweet Christmas.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Netflix has given us another gift, and that gift would be a second season of Luke Cage. Yes, in somewhat typical fashion, the announcement was made this afternoon in a brief video on Twitter, this afternoon being literally today, as I'm saying this, showing the exterior of Pop's barbershop. As the camera closes in on the window, a neon sign lights up reading, Season 2 coming soon. Yes, very nice. The news more formally announced at Comic-Con Brazil probably shouldn't come as a surprise considering that Luke Cage emerged as Marvel's biggest Netflix hit of 2016. So that's even bigger than Jessica Jones and the second season of Daredevil, despite the fact that no one seems to be talking about it.
Yes.
Anyway, more than that, it reportedly enjoyed a stronger debut than the streaming service's recent sensations Making a Murderer and Stranger Things.
Yeah, well, come on. I do seem to remember Luke Cage crashed Netflix for a while.
It did.
Yep.
A good while. If I hadn't been away that day, I probably would have joined that little server crashed, but there we are. Yes, so once again, to go over what the current plans now are for Marvel Netflix stuff, There is no exact date for season two. However, the 2017 calendar is filled with Iron Fist and the Defenders miniseries currently in production. Iron Fist, of course, debuting in February. And they're expected to be followed in 2018 by the debut of The Punisher, the second season of Jessica Jones, and the third season of Daredevil. So okay. One can say it's 2018, 2019 at this point. I'm thinking they're going to move one of those up into 2017, but that's just my thought. So, hey.
Yep.
If you want to get caught up on the first season, all 13 episodes still available streaming on Netflix. And we're still talking about that show. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Come on. Catch up. You won't be sorry. Although I will say that we did get some feedback. I'm going to go over there now. From one of our longtime listeners, Danger Mouse.
Okay.
And what he says regarding Luke Cage is... I think I touched on this at one point, but let's see. There we are. I'll read it out directly. Can't believe I'm having to catch up with Luke Cage to stay along with you guys. I normally binge the Marvel shows in a weekend and complain y'all are too slow, but this one has been really, really tough to want to continue.
Which... I mean, I've got to say, even though I've tended to have the experience of I try and keep up with our week to week, and then towards the end, I tend to maybe get a little ahead when I really, really want to know what happens. But certainly, I've not had any trouble keeping up myself. I mean, I've been finding the way they're spinning the story out and the mix of pushing the present day story forward and mixing in with the giving us the background and backstories to be. I've found the pacing to be really, really good.
Yes, I have too, and I think that actually, compared to some of those other shows, this one does actually fit a fairly good episodic structure to the point where you can do it week by week, and it actually feels like you're watching a regular TV show, where I think that Daredevil and Jessica Jones, in some respects, were more serialized to the point where it felt jarring sometimes to have a break in between. But I don't know, maybe that's part of the problem, but I did ask... I know I asked at some point, hey, Danger Mouse, why don't you tell us exactly what it is that you found tough to continue or to want to continue? So if this is a repeat of that, I'm still putting it out there because I haven't seen any response. So there you go. But yeah, I'm happy to see that happen. I'm happy to see the massive success of the Marvel Netflix material.
Oh, most definitely.
Gary. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just voicing agreement.
Okay. Gary, next, and this is very alternative.
Yeah, definitely it is. It is not television, direct cable, or internet fare, but nonetheless, we have many of our fans do follow this as well, and it does have quite the following, I guess you'd say. What we're talking about is the Harry Potter West End show. I guess it's in the West End right now. That's playing over in London, specifically Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. It's opened in London to great reviews and terrific attendance numbers. And usually when something like that happens, people immediately ask, well, when's it going to come over to Broadway? Well, they've announced that it will be opening in Broadway in 2018 at the Lyric Theater. Final talks are in proceeding right now to make this happen, and there has been rumors that the current show there, Cirque du Soleil's Paramore, has announced that they will be relocating out of that theater. So that sounds definitely encouraging that all this is coming to pass. For those people who were not aware of this show, it is sort of a I believe it's a sequel to Harry Potter in some respects, and it's being developed by the same people that did develop the London show, so there should be a rather seamless continuity as far as both shows go. Everybody who's couldn't come up with a reason to pop over to London, now you only have to make it to New York.
Now, did either of you read the play itself, or at least the rehearsal copy that was put out back in July?
No, I have not.
No, Joe.
I see. I have.
I assume so.
Yes. And I find it very interesting that was released and everybody got to have all those plot morsels and everything else. And there was practically no discussion on it. But you'd think the unofficial eighth story that kind of really puts a kind of period on the entire story, if you know, a final mark on it, that you'd hear a lot more about it, and you didn't. And I'll at least say this much: maybe the live performance version of it is you know, spectacular enough to really overcome what I feel is a glorified piece of fan fiction. Because it doesn't read anything like what you would think J.K. Rowling would have come up with herself.
Well, you know, plays don't often, you know, receive that type of criticisms that movies and other things do. It's, you know, at least for me, a lot of times the play's almost more about performance than story. I hate to say it, but...
That may be the case in this regard.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my other question would be: has there been? I mean, if there hasn't been much discussion, I'm assuming this may not be out there. But did the final product that wound up on stage differ at all from that rehearsal copy? Because particularly with a new play like that, they may have been to workshopping it to some extent and seeing what worked on stage, and some of that stuff might not have actually made it into the final production.
From what I understand, it's fairly faithful.
Okay.
So, who knows? We'll see what it looks like, because I'm sure that there will be plenty of people on this side of the pond that make their way to New York, as Gary suggested. But I am curious. I did not hear a lot of glowing positive, and I wasn't hearing a whole lot of people going, man, if it would only come to Broadway. So.
Well, it's been doing quite good. You know, quite
yeah, it
well
has been,
there,
been
so.
Doing very well. I won't deny that, so. All right, talking about things that are in development. Edmund.
This is news from Brownstone Productions, which is the production company founded by the husband and wife team of Elizabeth Banks and Max Handelman. They have had a big box office success with the Pitch Perfect franchise and are now making the move onto the small screen. They have inked a TV deal over at Warner Brothers and have now sold projects to four different networks in this development season. ABC has bought a buddy cop action comedy called The Trustee, written by the writers for Smurfs and Baywatch, Jay Sherrick and David Ron. Will be executive produced by Banks and Handelman. And this follows a very good but slightly reckless narcotics detective who finds out that her station's trustee, who is a nonviolent felon assigned to help cops with odd jobs, filing, and custodial work, has insight into a case she's trying to crack, and the two women are forced to team up. They are also developing for the CW a property called Feral, which is a drama centering around a 20-year-old Trident Marvin, who steps out of the woods after years of isolation, unaware that she carries a secret that puts her at the center of an unfurling conspiracy. In addition, there were a couple of projects from last year. Fox giving a pilot commitment to a comedy from Emily Kapnick, who was one of the Suburgatory writers, although it never went to series. They have the comedies over at CBS and NBC as well. And in addition, they are branching beyond broadcast. There is an in-the-works cable project for a novel called Shrill, Notes from a Loud Woman, which they've optioned the rights to and want to develop this feminist story as a half-hour series. So lots of stuff coming from Brownstone. However, they are also continuing with their film work. The hotly anticipated Pitch Perfect 3 is also in development, along with a reboot of Charlie's Angels, which Elizabeth Banks will in fact be directing. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Banks isn't giving up her acting shoes. She is gearing up to star in the Power Rangers revival. So, lots of stuff going on for Brownstone Productions.
So it would appear. Some of those sound fairly interesting.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the CW one in particular, you know, because they aside from some things like, you know, the exceptions like the 100, they have been having a more spotty success with their non-DCW offerings recently. So it'll be interesting to see if that can break the trend.
Very true. Very true. All right, moving over to gaming news. And this weekend was actually fairly substantial for that, because it was a PlayStation event where they were talking about some new exclusives, and boy, did they get into some things that no one was expecting. We have a couple of them here. The first one is The Last of Us 2, as I mentioned way back at the top. It has been announced and it features a grown-up Ellie. Those who played the game know exactly what I mean and why that's significant. But yes, it was Yeah, so Naughty Dog had mistakenly confirmed that the game was in development last year, and Sony revealed the sequel to Naughty Dog's critically and commercially successful title was coming basically over the weekend. Ellie seems to have grown up in the game, and Joel is still accompanying her. The original game ended on a cliffhanger note, and players weren't sure what would happen to Ellie and Joel. The revealed trailer puts all their doubts to rest, as both of them will be returning. However, the past events of the original game might have had an impact on their relationship, and it would be interesting to see what kind of equation they share now. Ellie doesn't look very happy in the reveal. No, she does not. And that makes things pretty interesting. So definitely, basically, The Last of Us was like playing an episode of The Walking Dead. About as close as you could get. So definitely a lot of fun. And I'm glad there is a second one coming, because it's been a while since the first one was out. Also surprising, Edmund, this next piece.
Yes, there was also some stuff being revealed about the next Uncharted game. No word yet on when Uncharted: The Lost Legacy will be released, which the article here is interpreting as possible good news for those who have not yet purchased a PlayStation and feel the urge to start saving up. The game will be exclusive to the PlayStation 4, but they have released a trailer. But Uncharted 4 may prove to be the final adventure for Nathan Drake, and they will finally be introducing new people for Uncharted: The Lost Legacy, Yeah, so and this comes after Naughty Dog apparently had been seemingly adamant regarding Uncharted 4 as the finale of the Uncharted franchise. So dropping this trailer for The Lost Legacy was a huge surprise, which in fact opened the PlayStation event this last weekend. This new game will be based around two of the franchise's best side characters, Uncharted 2's Chloe Fraser and Uncharted 4's Nadine Ross, as they set off on an adventure involving, we don't really know yet, because they don't want to tell us yet. However, the trailer did show Chloe sneaking through a war-torn town in disguise before meeting her accomplice Nadine atop a roof, and the video's description makes a vague reference to a fabled ancient Indian artifact that the two are trying to recover. So that's what we can tell you for now, other than that it's an Uncharted game, so it will play similar to other Uncharted games.
Bronstum right now is dancing a jig of joy.
Yes, indeed.
I already did mine, so there you go. Uncharted 4 definitely ended on a very definitive note, so this is nice that they're going to find a way to kind of tell a different side story without losing that sense of completion that they already had.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Finally, we have some news coming out of Telltale Games, who just is wrapping up their Batman game and will be doing another Walking Dead. But, ooh, there's something else. I've got a feeling anyway.
Yes, there is, and it's an odd sort of way we found out about this news. The actual news itself is that Telltale Games is adapting Guardians of the Galaxy for their next project. They're planning on it to be a five-part adventure series that will debut both on consoles, PC, as well as mobile devices next year. The way we found out about it, though, was a bit odd. SAG and AFTRA voice actors are getting ready to go on strike, and as is typically the case, they do announce some projects that won't be struck against and some that will. And in the midst of the details, information that I'll just skip because it gets a little tedious. It was basically announced that the Guardians of the Galaxy project is one of the projects that the voice actors will not be striking. So that's how we managed to find out about it. And Telltale has been working with Marvel for some time now. And this is the first game of their partnership that they've been working on for a while. And I have a sense that the Guardians of the Galaxy will probably only be the first of many games to come. And we'll have to see what happens, but it is on track for a 2017 release and will not be struck against. Now, what this actual strike might affect some other shows that we do watch regularly or are interested in, we'll have to wait and see. But as I said, this was how we found out about this project actually existing in the first place.
Yeah, that strike is currently ongoing, so who knows what exactly that's going to affect, but it doesn't sound like it's going to affect this particular game, which is nice. All right, so Next, we have some news. Wait a second. Where is that? Thank you. This is movie news. And, well, this is actually some fairly funny movie news. Kevin Smith's Buckaroo Banzai hits legal trouble as MGM files a lawsuit. So, fans of the 1984 sci-fi adventure comedy, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, may have been intrigued to learn that a TV series based on the film, its character, and world was on the way from Amazon and Kevin Smith. But before Smith can get to work, making that a reality, there are some legal matters to attend to. Apparently, MGM has filed a complaint in California federal court against the writer and director of the original 84 film. The lawsuit says that they asserted in multiple letters to plaintiffs that they, not the plaintiffs, supposedly own the rights to produce and distribute a Buckaroo Banzai TV series. Oops. The suit goes on to state that these claims have led to substantial controversy between the parties with great immediacy. Boy, that's legal language for you. And that MGM seeks to develop its new television series without defendants' interference. Accordingly, plaintiffs bring this action to seek a declaration of the rights and legal relations of the parties with regard to Buckaroo Banzai. And I just love the fact that you've got all this language, legal language, and it's all in and they have to say in regard to Buckaroo Banzai.
Yes.
I see a guy with a white wig saying this.
Of course, yes.
Essentially, what we've got here is that MGM and Kevin Smith were running with this ball, and oops, forgot that there was somebody else that they needed to kind of get the rights from first. There's a lot in this article about legalese and how the rights work and everything else, and you could probably get a whole dissertation on that. But for all intents and purposes, if you were really looking forward to this particular reboot, reimagining, whatever you want to call it, might be waiting a little longer than you thought.
Yeah, indeed. But certainly, probably, I mean, just the one takeaway for me is this thing that apparently MGM has been working on a series apparently since at least 2008, and of course are asserting that the other folks, Kevin Smith and his partners, were aware of that, and we're just going ahead anyway.
Why not? All right. In further movie news, Edmund.
We got word from Disney about the live-action remake of the Jungle Book, which, of course, they immediately put a sequel into motion before the first film even debuted, with director Jon Favreau returning. Of course, he has also been announced that he is also going to be directing the live-action remake of The Lion King. And the intention now is to shoot the two films back-to-back. Jon Favreau is quoted over at Collider as saying, "The plan is we go right from one into the other, but I know from having worked on two superhero movies back-to-back, these take many, many, many years." I was working on Marvel movies for like 4 years back-to-back. It's a big chunk of your life, and you have to make sure that you're excited and can bring all your attention and concentration to bear on this, because they are really big puzzles. Each film is a puzzle you have to solve. These highly technical ones are like 3D chess. There's like a whole other level to it that has to be understood and learned, which should perhaps mean that make it no surprise that, yes, there is no announced release date for The Lion King.
That's just a really odd way to put it. Anyway. Wow, okay. So he's equating these movies to the Marvel... Okay. I'll buy it. I can't imagine what it's going to take to make The Lion King work as a live-action film.
Yeah.
But there we are. That means that we can move over to casting news. And we begin with Gary.
Yes, the casting news, at least this first story, deals with Tom Holland of upcoming Spider-Man fame. Tom Holland is, of course, cast to play Spider-Man in next year's Spider-Man Homecoming movie, and is currently in negotiations to join Daisy Ridley in Lionsgate's post-apocalyptic thriller Chaos Walking. This is, of course, based on the best-selling young adult novel penned by Patrick Ness. The story takes place in a world where all women have been killed by a germ, and all living creatures can hear one another's thoughts in a stream of images, words, and sound called noise. Holland would star as the boy who is forced to flee his town along with his loyal dog and comes upon a strange sight. A girl.
And wait a minute. Why can I see Harlan picking up the phone and calling his lawyer right now?
Yep. That's the thought I had.
Anyway, continue.
I was looking for an adapted by, and I never quite saw it. Yeah. Anyway, Of course, as we well know, you know, Daisy Ridley is, of course, famous from the latest Star Wars movie. And this is currently being, the script is being worked on by Charlie Kaufman, late of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And it's planning at the moment to be produced by Doug Davidson, who is one of the co-producers of Rogue One, as well as the recent live-action Cinderella movie. So he hasn't confirmed he's in it yet, but it sounds very promising.
Okay. Yeah, that whole premise sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah.
Just
a boy and his dog, huh? Who would have thought? Yeah.
Well, those universal constants, yes.
In our next piece here, Jodie Foster is going to be starring in a sci-fi thriller called Hotel Artemis. Yes, so set in its own distinctive crime universe. Okay. Hotel Artemis is based on an original script by, where's the name? Drew Pierce. Jodie Foster joins the original new near-future thriller as the character of the nurse. Casting Jodie Foster is a real coup. She's an extraordinary talent and will bring something very special to the film. We are delighted to welcome her to this exciting production. Drew's vision is unique, and we can't wait to see it brought to life by a stellar cast. So I'm looking to see if there is any news about what the story might be. And in fact, there is nothing about what the story might be other than the fact that it's a near original near future thriller. Huh. All right. It's so original that we have no idea what it is. There you go. Jodie Foster is going to be in it. Next, Edmund. Okay.
Yeah, this is news about the Rupert Wyatt's next film, Captive State. John Goodman will star in it. This is a film that Rupert Wyatt is directing from a script he co-wrote with his wife, Eric Beeney. Let's see. Plot details are being kept under wraps, but the film would have a sci-fi angle. Whether it's an acute angle or an isosceles triangle, we don't know yet, which means it's also unknown what role Goodman will be playing in the film. So, yes, another of these lovely announcements that there's a film. They're making it. John Goodman's going to be in it. And we might hear something more detail sometime later.
I'm just imagining John Goodman's character from 10 Cloverfield Lane arguing about the difference between an acute and obtuse angle.
Yes.
It's kind of terrifying, to be perfectly honest. So let's move on to the next piece here. Gary?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, it's been announced that Ulrich Thompson is going to be joining the Starz spy thriller Counterpart when production begins. Counterpart is an original series from the Starz network that's going to be a 10-episode run. And it's, of course, based on a espionage thriller with a metaphysical twist. It's going to have a pretty good cast, including J.K. Simmons, Olivia Williams, and Harry Lloyd, with Morton Tildum from The Imitation Game and Passengers directing the first episode. It's the story of Howard Silk, which is being played by J.K. Simmons, a lowly cog in a bureaucratic agency who discovers that the agency he works for is really guarding a crossing into a parallel dimension. Through Howard and his counterpart on the other side, the show will navigate themes of identity, what-ifs, and lost loves. Starz has ordered two seasons of 10 episodes apiece. As we said, Ulrich Thompson is joining the cast. He's taking over for Michael Nyquist, who has departed the series due to scheduling difficulties. This series was created and written by Justin Marks, late of the live-action Jungle Book movie, and it's being executive produced by both Tildum and Marks, along with Amy Berg, who recently worked on Da Vinci's Demons. So, filling in the crew. So we'll have to see what happens. This has been long in coming, though. The original agreement for this was signed all the way back in 2015. So,
okay,
It's been a long time coming in the scope of things.
Yeah, no. Well, first I'm hearing of it, but I am kind of intrigued. It sounds like it might be the spy thriller sequel to Fringe that we never knew we wanted, perhaps.
Yeah, it's just sound Fringe-like to me when I was first reading up on it, yeah.
And that brings us to our final news item for the week.
Yes, indeed. This is news about the Lego Batman movie, and I'm quite chuffed by this. They have confirmed that Billy Dee Williams will be returning, providing the voice of Two-Face. Of course, he famously played Harvey Dent in the 1989 original Tim Burton Batman movie, and now we'll get to give his Lego variation on Harvey's dark alter ego. It has been confirmed by the Lego Batman director Chris McKay, asking whether Williams will in fact be returning as Two-Face, and it was a simple confirmation that yes he does. This has been teased before, since a Two-Face vaguely resembling Billy Dee Williams has been spotted in the background of previous trailers, this is actually also a fulfillment of a longtime wish of Mr. Williams, who very much wanted to play Two-Face in the third Batman film, but in the end was not able to. So now he finally gets to return to the role.
There you go. I had forgotten that he was Two-Face or Harvey Dent in the original Batman.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, that is it for this week's news.
Yep, and John, I did just want to break in and say, yes, we have no official in memoriam, but I did just want to say on a personal note, a very heartfelt farewell to Andrew Sachs, who most famously played Manuel on Fawlty Towers and was our latest 2016 casualty this week.
There's just been so many.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track, to be honest.
Well, you know, if nothing else, there's only a few weeks left. So.
Don't tempt 2016. Don't taunt it. Don't poke it any more than we have to. Let's just try to get out in the last few weeks without any major casualties, any more major casualties. Anyway, that's it for this particular episode. What we're going to do is come back next time with our episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.